Okay, so we're talking about anniversary shows, and Dusty, I think I mentioned this earlier, that you said this to me the other day on Messenger. You're like, "Let me run some math by you, my friend. If you're born or whatever, if your wedding took place on this
No,
date."
here's exactly what I said, just so it's on record. WrestleMania got married in 1985.
Yeah.
Therefore,
His first anniversary.
1986 was their first anniversary.
Yep. Yep. Therefore.
Etc. Yeah.
So, yeah, I don't know. Like,
I hate that.
I appreciated the fact that at Starcade 93, they called it the 11th Starcade, the 10th anniversary.
Right.
Exactly.
That's exactly what it is.
For all of WCW's shortcomings, they could at least
They
do
could
their
do
math.
math.
Well, for a while, they could at least do their math. Then they fucking tanked. But here we have the 9th anniversary of WrestleMania, WrestleMania 10, held in Madison Square Garden, New York City, back where it all began again. And
10 years in the making.
10 years in the making. Thank you. I forgot the damn tagline. I remember all the, like, we're on Broadway and all this stuff, the commercials leading up to it.
Well, they say that I walk faster on Broadway.
On Broadway.
Wow, well, this is what they served up to us on Broadway.
Now that I've brought us down a little bit.
Yeah. No. two excellent matches on this show, and
who
daddy, the rest of the show stunk. But it was what it was for 1994, and what
oh,
it
man,
was,
I love it.
What it was started, let's see, I'm not even going to get into the free-for-all match because it wasn't actually on the free-for-all.
Nope.
First match of the card was Owen Hart versus Bret Hart. Owen beats Bret. Yet another match where it was built up months in advance. Survivor Series 93, the Harts versus what was supposed to be Jerry Lawler and his knight. Jerry Lawler.
Then the rape allegation. Yep.
Jerry Lawler's in court defending off rape allegations. Shawn Michaels all of a sudden has a court with knights in it.
Yeah. Shawn Michaels, who had quit, so
yeah, exactly.
Shows up out of nowhere. Yep.
Yeah, so he's brought back in a fucking gif. Now, Owen Hart's the only Hart family member eliminated in that match, comes down to the ring, takes it out on Bret. They get back together, and they team up at Royal Rumble 94 to wrestle the Quebecers. And with The Rocket leading the way, and my brother right behind me, 1994 is going to be a great year for The Rocket. And the
fucking
Hitman,
awesome.
Too. And then, and then selfish, too, too damn selfish, Bret would tag out, and fucking Owen kicked his leg out of his leg, and now here we are, Wrestling Mania 10.
Oh my god, that was so well done, because all he did was kick his leg. He didn't turn on him, he didn't like beat him with a chair, he didn't beat him into submission.
Yep.
It was, you know. Yeah,
and that capacity crowd in Providence, Rhode Island that night, which was probably also the population of Providence, Rhode Island, they booed the shit out of him for doing
oh,
that.
Oh man, it was.
Shit up.
Oh god, I ate that shit up too because I was 15, so it was fantastic. Plus,
yep.
There was a Rougeau in the match, so.
Ah, good call.
Yep.
So there's your build up, and now Owen wrestles Bret. Owen beats Bret to start WrestleMania, and this is we know that Bret has a title match later on in the night.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, there's the curveball that they threw us, but Owen wins.
Oh,
great.
So good
match.
Because it was a fantastic match all the way through, move for move. You could tell they kind of trained the same, and Owen kind of used his high flying and Bret used his submission stuff, but it was just perfectly done, and Bret didn't need the win. Owen needed everything, so
right.
It was just perfect.
Well, Bret was going to get his heat back in 2.5 hours.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly. But
this is the kind of booking that doesn't exist anymore. Bret's going to win the title. Owen's got a victory over him, so he can say he has a legitimate shot at the title.
Yep.
That's how you book.
Yeah, exactly. Owen beats Bret, so when Bret becomes a world champion, Owen has said, "I beat you." Boom. Yeah, exactly.
Yep.
So everything about that was well done. The match was
mm-hmm.
great. The game was great. Then what we followed up by, Cy Sperling, and announces, "Oh, And by the way, the
Finkel with hair.
What was that ring announcer's name? Dunn? I think it was actually Stephen Dunn's brother. What was it? Bill Dunn. That was his name. Ring announcer Bill Dunn introduces Cy Sperling, who then introduces Howard Finkel with a toupee. And he's like, "What do you think?" And the crowd kind of cheers a little bit. And I think Vince McMahon says something like, "Looks kind of stupid." Fink obviously has his earpiece in, and he makes that face like, "Oh, yeah, it is."
Yeah.
Yeah, dumb, whatever.
Then Finkel announces our next match, mixed tag team match, Bam Bam Bigelow and Luna Vachon, who's been in more mixed tag team matches on WrestleMania cards than any other woman in WrestleMania history, versus Doink and Dink. Oh, my God. Bigelow and Doink.
If this had been a singles match between Bigelow and Doink had been played by Matt Bourne, it would have been fine.
Yep.
Yeah, but it was, this was horrible Doink at his worst. Yeah.
Oh, certainly.
Well, not at worst, but pretty
happy,
close.
Giddy Doink. Yeah, I'm pretty sure Doink at his worst would have been on the independent scene. But
Survivor Series 94, too.
Oh, my God, with Pink, Wink, and Stink.
Yep.
Queef, and whoever else he had.
Queef, yeah. Queef, Larry, Steve, and Lawler.
Mo Shemp, Mo Shemp, was it the morning of a stooge? Anyway, not good, pretty sad. Doink did spray Cy Sperling with his flower, to which Jerry Lawler commented, "Hey, it stays on his head even in water." Or you can even get it wet or something like that. Here's an interesting matchup to follow that one, though. Randy Savage beats Crush in a Falls Count Anywhere match at Madison Square Garden. Dusty, for some reason, I feel like you have something to say about this match, and I don't know why.
Okay, care to share it?
I don't know. I feel like you've defended this match in the past, and I could be wrong.
I have. I like this match.
I actually do too. So.
What do you like about this match? I mean, I'm not trying to argue and be, you know, because I didn't mind it, but I just want to know what you like about this match and why. Fucking get this rumor out of my head.
How do I even put this? It's like, this is the best way to use Crush, for one thing.
Yep, in a street fight.
Yeah.
Well, it's sort of like a precursor.
To the hardcore?
To hardcore, yeah.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I was thinking.
And Randy Savage, and here's another little rant. I think I was talking to Old Scratch Old Johnson Old the other night about this.
I've heard of that guy.
Yeah.
Older than time.
Oh. And, Savage should have been, he wanted to wrestle, right?
Mm-hmm.
So why didn't they use him regularly?
Right.
Why did they have to make our ears bleed with his commentary?
Oh, my
God.
Doing it.
They're doing the thing.
Yeah.
That was
smart
thing by Tatanka.
Bazaar with a capital B. Spell the rest.
Save it. We'll get there.
Yeah. Oh.
Yep.
Right.
That's tomorrow. Definitely.
We'll get there tomorrow. Yep. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well. Yeah. Okay. I'm with you though. I like this match.
It was good. It was WWF. Version of 1994 hardcore. I mean, if you were watching WCW with Cactus Jack and Kevin Sullivan or Max Payne and the Nasties, it was kind of like, but it was still, it was entertaining for what it was.
Sure.
So.
The only thing I didn't like was the finish.
Yeah, where him dangling upside down with a cord or on his feet.
He should have just done a better job of learning how to tie a knot, because
he tied
a terrible knot, and as soon as he walked away, fucking Crush had to do a handstand for like 5 seconds. And he just crumbled to the floor.
Randy Savage was a Boy Scout knot.
My God. Agreed. Trust me, I agree with you on that point. But, so, like you said, good for what it was. Here's a match that's not good for anything, is Alundra Blaze.
Oh, God.
Leilani
Kai.
And Alundra Blaze looks like her face could hold an 8-day rain.
I love Lawler on commentary as she's using, trying to use her foot to get to the ropes, and she's stomping on the mat. And he's like, trigger count to three.
Alundra Blaze walks into a bar, and the bartender says, "Why the long face?"
Why the long face? I love it. And of course, they bring back Leilani Kai because she was the women's champion WrestleMania 1 that Wendy Richards beat for the belt. Whatever. This is fucking Leilani Kai, for Christ's sake.
Nobody cared.
That was a rock. Didn't need to overturn. Whatever.
Yep.
Anyway, that's not bad.
Next. Yep.
Here we go. Here's
another
four.
Match I have defended. Yes.
Okay, well, here's four luminaries. And Dusty, okay, I'm ready for you to defend this too. The match was Men on a Mission defeating the tag team champions, the Quebecers, via countout. So, let's hear your defense for this match.
And my commentary for this match is almost the same as the Savage match. I liked everything but the finish.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like a countout is so weak for a WrestleMania.
Oh, God, yeah, I agree.
No, I can justify a DQ in the next match. I can justify a weak finish in that match, but a countout in this match, no, not really.
One especially, wasn't it that week where the tag titles on the house shows had changed hands, where the Quebecers won or lost to the Men on a Mission, and then Men on a Mission held it for a day?
And then lost it right back.
And then lost it right back. So I thought they were going to have at least a clean finish coming in.
There's no reason Mo couldn't have taken a job there.
Yeah.
Shock.
Worried about his future push.
Mo. Mm-hmm. But, really, the best way I can defend this match is that the Quebecers sure had their working boots on.
Yes, they did.
They were
hitting all kinds of cool shit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, their double team moves were always cool. They were doing them all. You had stuff too, like one of them was laid out outside the ring. Mabel stood over him, and Mo came off with the bulldog off the apron Mabel would splash the man laying on the floor. They were doing cool stuff at the time. It was, it certainly was not the height of tag team wrestling in WWF.
No.
Yeah.
But definitely passable wrestling. That's solid stuff. This is why. This is one of the reasons why this is my favorite WrestleMania.
Okay.
Is because the bad stuff was at least halfway decent and entertaining, you know?
Yep.
Yeah. Yep.
Compared to the year before and the year after, it really shines.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
Yep. Let's see. Somewhere in here, too, I don't know why I just thought of this, because I don't remember. Did he get involved in the last title match? I thought about Burt Reynolds and the whole... Rhonda Shear talking about, she's like, I want to go to FanFest. I remember who was, okay, I'm babbling. I think Donnie Wahlberg was actually the...
Donnie Wahlberg and Jenny Garth were there,
Jenny
too.
Jenny Garth.
Which, by the way, did anyone remember any of the words of the WrestleMania 10 rap?
WrestleMania fighting to survive. It's just like
that.
Oh, wait, no, that was a later one.
That's the song for 9. But the
rap
for 10 done by Men on a Mission included, let's see, we got Donnie Wahlberg, NKOTB. What rhymes with that? Something rhymes with NKOTB. Like, we got Rhonda Shear from Up All Night. WrestleMania 10 is out of sight. We got Jenny Garth from 90210. She'll be ringing the bell if you really want to know. We got Burt Reynolds from Evening Shade and Smokey and the Bandit. He had it made. We got fucking Donnie Wahlberg, NKOTB. Don't have no career after this, you see. What the fuck else did he do? Something about Hair Club for Men. We got Cy Sperling. Hair will be weaving, corn rolling, and curling. fuck. Brilliant. It was great. It was fucking awesome.
Okay. Yeah. Sorry, I got confused. I forgot.
And it was all laid out by your special friend.
Dude, I am a true friend to Oscar.
Yes.
Yes. Fucking awesome.
Anyway, yeah, I think it was
an honorable mention to Johnny Polo.
Yep. He was at his obnoxious best in this.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
And he was doing the free for all backstage interviewing.
Mm-hmm.
He was like, I know what Burt Reynolds had for breakfast today. Yeah, back to you, Toad. That shit was great.
Toad Pettengill. Yep.
Yep. Thank you, Todd. Thank you, brother. I know what Jenny Garth had for breakfast today. Back to you, Toad. anyway, Donnie Wahlberg introduces the following match, world title match. First one of the night, Yokozuna beats Lex Luger via disqualification. Mr. Perfect is your special guest referee, and Lex Luger touches him once.
A philosophical point here.
Yep. Okay.
This match should have been second.
Yes.
Yeah.
Agreed.
This should have been the second match on the card for two reasons. One is because the other guy who was going to be in the final match wrestled first. And number two, because Yoko needs as much time in between matches as possible.
He could fit three meals in between that first that second match in the end.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That was pretty bad. You could see Yokozuna when they went backstage for that interview.
Oh, God, yeah.
Which, by the way, was a great interview. Jim Cornette was on top of the game that night.
Oh, yes, he was.
He's talking about, you thought you had things in hand like a purr kitten. And whatever else he said.
Didn't he call him a toad petting zoo?
Toad petting zoo, yep.
Yep, toad petting zoo, my God. And then, Yokozuna was still blown up. And, of course,
I know.
They trot out Mr. Fuji three times in one night. He can't even walk up the goddamn stairs.
No, it took him. He was slower than Yoko.
Yep. So Yoko gives him the boost. Here's Yoko with his belt hanging down over his belly. And, here comes Brett, fresh as a daisy. But before then, he wrestled Lex Luger. 9 minutes, I think. I went away from the page for a second.
I think it was about nine and a half, something like that.
Oh, I'm sorry. No, it was actually 14 minutes.
Oh, okay.
Wow. It was 14 minutes. I think about 8 or 9 of them were a nerve hold.
Yeah.
Yep.
And during that whole time, Luger could have been helping his fucking kid with homework during this time because he was not selling this nerve pinch at all.
No.
He was just sitting there staring forward and puffing his cheeks out once in a while.
Luger's
Man. Oh, yeah, you could tell by that point the crowd was not behind him at all. They kind of saw through him.
Yep.
He wasn't getting the cheers he was. Well, he never did. You could tell Brett was the big star, so I think WWF got that right.
Yep.
Because they did that coin toss leading into it, and it would have been Lex Luger and Crush in the first match.
Uh-huh.
Oh, God.
And then actually, the thing that I remember, well, there are a lot of memorable things for all the wrong reasons of the match, but Vince McMahon on commentary was having orgasm as Lex Luger was coming to the ring. Yes! Yes! You can feel it! What am I supposed to be feeling right now?
No. Honestly, I can, Vince.
Like Dave Attell says, in any country, if it feels like more than two fingers, it's probably a dick. And that's really not the yes you can feel it that I wanted out of this match. And then the Luger gets disqualified, and they're backstage, and he's trying to spit out. He's like, "That's bogus, and you know it,
it.
That's my story, and I'm sticking to it."
That's
that was probably
that perfect. That stutter talk, I like that.
Yep, all that leading to absolutely nothing. Perfect never wrestles again in WWF.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yep.
And so you could tell they were planning for something.
He did in 2002, but that doesn't count.
Well, I mean, but yeah.
Yeah.
At that point.
Yep. My God. Anyway, I mean, that was just an embarrassment. And they were trying to do something special for WrestleMania 10. They figured two world title matches would be the special hook. Wrestling was at a down point at this time. Let's keep
going. Oh, yes.
The buy rate wasn't bad, but bad for wrestling then was better for bad for wrestling now. Whereas they could have drawn they drew a 1.68 on pay-per-view. You know, we've seen buy rates around the 0.5 range in recent past. So their bad was still better than our bad is now, but they were really trying to get the buy rate up for WrestleMania. And unfortunately, that meant that their two title matches had to involve Yokozuna twice, who was a great champion.
Right. I agree.
He was a great heel champion for a long time. Two matches
perfect for the time.
Yeah, two
That's
matches
surprising
in one night.
That they went with a heel for that long, too.
Yeah, exactly. That was
definitely not Vince's philosophy.
No, other than the 2 months of bullshit Hogan reign, which we'll get to tomorrow.
We'll get there. Hang on.
Yeah. Yep. But then
1993 was a red letter year.
Woo!
Yeah, it was a scarlet letter year. But then you have, again, we're stuck with Luger as one of the main eventers, like you said, Jordan, that no one was buying into.
Not at all.
And they tried to do the whole, like, crowd cheering thing at the Royal Rumble when they had the co-winners. It was obvious.
Yeah, but even then, you could hear Brett win 3-1 over everything, over Luger.
Yeah, definitely. So we get through that match, and then we're running out of time, so Earthquake beats Atom Bomb in 32 seconds.
Right, and they cut out a match that was supposed to happen to a 10-man tag.
Right, well, yeah.
No, I'm the captain!
I'm the captain! I'm fucking awful. Jesus Christ. That's awesome.
They argue over who's the captain, the match gets cut. Awesome.
Yeah, Vince
great logic.
Is like, well, can't decide who the captain is, better not have this match. Now here's a match we can talk about. Intercontinental title match, ladder match. Razor Ramon beats Shawn Michaels in 1847.
Beautiful.
Standard bearer for a long time.
Mm-hmm. It looks kind of simple now if you watch it compared to the spot fest that ladder matches have become. But
right.
At the time, it was just mind-bogglingly awesome. So.
That's the argument against it, is that it opened the floodgates for a whole lot of nonsense afterwards.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
You're not going to squeeze an Edge and Christian style match out of Razor Ramon. But the thing is, you know, the good thing, you know, everyone always says that Razor Ramon's a good worker when he wants to be, and he is. And, of course, there's also the Ric Flairs of the world that say Shawn Michaels wrestled the ladder for 20 minutes, which in a way he did.
He did, but he sold that ladder really well.
Yeah, shit. I don't know. What is there to say about this match that hasn't already
been set? It's one of the best matches. I mean, really, it set the bar so high for so long.
This WrestleMania has two of my top five. So.
Mm-hmm. That one and Bret and Owen. Yep.
Yep, absolutely.
Me
yeah,
too.
And I mean, we were all around the same age, between like the 13 to 15 age range.
Mm-hmm.
This was, I just don't want to speak for you guys, but this was pretty much unlike anything I'd seen at this point.
Oh, yeah, me too. I had seen the Coliseum video match between Shawn and Brett, and that one's long and kind of boring. This one was way better.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like Shawn took what he learned from that match and improved upon everything.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Plus, he was also motivated to work with his friend, Razor Ramon.
Right. And I just like the storyline leading up to it. Shawn gets stripped of the belt, but he still has gets stripped of the title, but he still has the belt. Razor gets awarded the belt after the battle royal and beats the model. And then so I'm the champion. No, you're the champion. Best way to decide it. Here you go. Winner gets both belts, which, you know, it was just great. It was, at the time, it was brilliant. So.
Awesome booking. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Everything just came together for these guys at the right time. This is also 2 years into Shawn Michaels' singles push. This was pretty much a year and a half after Razor Ramon's debut. It was secondary title match.
About Shawn Michaels, he was the curtain jerker in two WrestleMania.
Three.
Yeah.
Oh, what? Yeah. Because he was in a Rockers match at 6.
Yeah, 9-8-7. Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
9-8-7,
I mean, yeah. Yep.
Yep. And so here he is in what ends up being the semi-main event of the night.
Right, and it's his last time down there. And then the next couple, he's the main eventer, so.
Yeah, well, it's funny, too, because right around this time, I think his future was up in the air again. He spent a lot of time riding the pine in 1994.
Yep, because he quit, and then he got injured, and then he quit again, and then he got injured. And
yeah, so, I mean, this could have been
smile
a
smile hard to come by.
Yeah.
but he did it, and he put Razor Ramon over, and, you know, everyone said it too, and it's true. It's hard to remember sometimes that Razor Ramon won that match.
Yep.
Because of how just good the match was and how great of a match Shawn Michaels
had. It's irrelevant who won at that point. It was just so good. So.
Exactly.
All right. It was actually at this point where they aired the little thing about the 10-man tag. And so it's like, well, we'll just have the following contest. So then Burt Reynolds introduces Rhonda Shearer.
A very drunk Burt Reynolds.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, he'd had a few by that point. And he was in a cast, too. I remember that.
Yeah. Oh, I think I actually got him mixed up. I think it was Donnie Wahlberg with Rhonda Shearer. And then I think it was, if I remember right, them.
I mean, it was Burt Reynolds and Jenny Garth. I thought
Jenny Garth from 90210.
And you know Burt got in there.
Oh yeah. Mm-hmm. After Lonnie Anderson, everything was golden. So
yeah. Mm-hmm. So we have we have Burt Reynolds come down, his hands in a cast. He's trying to do the announcing off of index cards that he can't read, and he's just like, yeah.
And his toupee's barely staying on.
He's totally doing his best impression of Norm MacDonald, doing his best impression of Burt Reynolds.
Turd Ferguson.
Hey, the following contest is scheduled one falls for the World Wrestling Federation. Up next, and he's like, probably the best wrestler in the world, Brad the Hitman Hart.
Awesome.
Awesome.
Yep. And the crowd still popped for him. That's how I knew, like, he was still, you know, still, like, really big star for that time. Because
yeah.
The crowd had already seen him, but they were really excited to see him again.
Yeah.
So, I think once they knew Luger had lost, that he was going to win, so.
Yeah.
Yeah, there was a buzz. Mm-hmm.
Yep, for
mm-hmm.
sure. There was a combination of that and, like, please God let the show end on a high note.
Yeah, exactly.
Type of thing. That's great, though. It's great that the New York City crowd was so excited for Brett.
Oh, yeah, because they're so goddamn cynical about everything, so.
Yep. And this is something that I've mentioned in audios before, but it seems like a wrestler's first world title isn't usually, like, the most celebrated.
No, it's always the second one.
It's always the second one, and this was Brett's second title win. Roddy Piper was the special referee. Yokozuna falls off the second rope, and... You know, it's supposed to almost look like Roddy Piper touched the rope where he had his hand, and he obviously didn't. And
nope.
Cornette's all up in arms, and Mr. Fuji's still walking down the aisle 10 minutes later. But then it's great, too, because the angle that you get, the camera shot of Bret Hart pinning Yokozuna, you can see a big section of the crowd just erupt into applause and
mm-hmm.
cheers. When he wins the belt, it was cool.
Because the crowd liked Brett, because Brett had been there for so long, and they'd seen him as a Hart Foundation guy and an Intercontinental Champion, and, you know, you could tell they just made up Luger and just shoved him down their throat.
Yeah.
So,
whereas they grew up with Brett.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
I did, too. Brett was my guy at that time.
Yeah.
Yeah, how many years did Brett Hart, like, I mean, for a good year, Brett Hart, like, the Hart Foundation and the British Bulldogs, would main event MSG nights or MSG shows, and generally it would go to 20-minute time limit draw or a curfew. And, you know,
between late 86 and early 88,
And then you got Bret Hart winning the Intercontinental belt at SummerSlam 91 at Madison Square Garden.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
great match, too. Yep.
Yeah, his career arc, really, and you can follow it by point by point, his times at Madison Square Garden.
Mm-hmm.
They loved it. They totally ate it up.
It was great. It was just... Right guy, right time, especially during the steroid scandal and everything, so.
Yeah.
All right, well, due to Dusty's defense of some of the stuff on this show, I'm also willing to say this was more good than bad. I will say that this WrestleMania got 2 votes for worst WrestleMania of all time.
I cannot see that in a million years. I could think
I
of
can't that at all.
15 more already.
Yeah. Well, the argument being that if you took the ladder match and the Brett Owen match off the card, that everything else sucked.
Well, it did, but the other two made it.
Those two matches will never be off that card.
Yeah.
Yeah, but why would you take them off? Exactly.
Exactly.
That's not a logical argument against
them. No.
Right. You're not going to have WrestleMania without Shawn Michaels, Razor Ramon, and Owen Hart.
No.
Really stupid argument against
if these matches didn't exist, this would have been great or awful or whatever.
Like,
so
if SummerSlam 91 only had Greg Valentine versus IRS, man, that would be a shitty show.
Greg Valentine would still be wrestling that match.
He wouldn't even be warmed up yet.
I know.
Years to get warmed up. Jesus Christ. His kid going to senior prom. He's still not warm.
I heart that droopy bastard. So.
Oh my god. Oh, so that's 10. And I remember for a long time when people were, you know, this was, you know, 10 years ago. People were like, what are the best WrestleManias of all time?
Mm-hmm.
10 would come up. WrestleMania 3, of course, would come up, and that's the next one on the list here of our top 5 WrestleManias of all time. WrestleMania 3, of course, is the classic Hulk Hogan versus Andre the Giant main event. It's
mm-hmm.
at the Pontiac Silver Dome near Detroit.
95 million people there.
Yeah. Hulk Hogan body slams a 17,000-pound giant.
Yep, 54 feet over his head.
Yep.
As same number of people in the crowd as what Andre weighed in at that day.
Yep.
95 million pounds.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Wow. This was... Wrestling had done many, many, many stadium shows in its past. World-class championship wrestling had done it a million times. Bill Watts had done it a million times. Dusty had kind of tinkered with, like, the last Tangle in Tampa or whatever it was called down in Tampa, Florida.
Yeah.
WWE, they had done their Shea Stadium shows over the years.
Right.
I don't really know their history of dome shows, though, big-ass shows like this.
They really hadn't done one.
Not really. This was a pretty big coup for WWE, and it paid off, certainly.
Yep.
Let's see. And I don't know, this was like the height. This was pretty much the height of 80s wrestling. The Rock and Wrestling Connection springboarded it. This was the peak. Then everyone starts doing well. Starts doing. Then the Coke and everything else becomes a lot more
starts wrestling. Starts doing.
Yeah, starts. Fuck that. This was probably the midpoint. This was like between 84 and 92.
I think this is kind of the last apex of the first wrestling boom. I think this sort of, it kind of crests after that and just sort of plateaus and just sort of goes forward. So,
Because
then the next few WrestleManias get progressively lower, so.
Yeah. Then, of course, and they kick it off with Tom Zenk.
The Z-Man.
Yeah, Rick Martel and the Z-Man.
Can-Am Connection.
Who did not get shot in the face with a bad blaster by Max Payne, despite my most fucking authoritative assertions at this autograph signing that Tom Zenk fucking agreed with me on.
Wasn't that Max Payne?
What's that?
Wasn't that Max Payne who got hit with the bad blaster?
No, Max Payne shot Johnny B. Bad in the face.
That's right. Okay. Yeah, my bad.
Yep.
Yeah. And the blasting. And Bad was the blast B.
Yeah. And Zenk was just the innocent onlooker / bystander.
He was the one who yelled at Payne and tore his shirt off real quick.
Oh, that's right. Okay.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah, it took him like 2 segments to take his shirt off, but nonetheless. then he threw 2 drop kicks, then got nailed with the whammy bar. Or the fucking Pain Game or whatever he called that thing back then. Yeah, it was good for what it was.
Yep.
Why do I remember that clash?
I don't know why.
Yeah, it was deep.
That was the one where Flair came back. That's why I remember.
Yep, okay.
Yeah, Flair Arn versus Hollywood Blondes, I think.
Yep.
Okay, excellent show.
Yeah, very good.
Okay, good.
So the Can-Am Connection takes on the slapdash tag team of Bob Orton and Don Morocco.
Ugh.
Love that team. Love that team.
Love that team. The funny thing is, I don't remember, I was 6, 7, I don't remember any of the shit.
Right.
There's a good chance they were probably a hell of an entertaining tag team.
Probably, yeah. I don't remember any of the build-up because, I wasn't really watching at the time. But, yeah, I'm sure it was. And you could tell they had big plans for the Can-Am Connection.
Yep.
Until Z-Man flaked out and bailed.
Yeah, their big plans transferred over to Strikeforce.
Right.
Yeah, they would have been exactly Strikeforce, really.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, and I've heard an old Observer interview with Martel, and he talks about they had big plans for Can-Am Connection until success came the way of Tom Zenk, and he didn't really know what to do, and he just quit.
Yep.
Yeah.
And then failure came to Tom Zenk, and he still didn't know what to do.
No, and then he quit then, too.
Yep. That match, whatever. It's all right. It's a good little 5-minute opener, but it's nothing to write
right.
home about.
Right. It's
Which really is going to be the case for most of this show. So
uh-huh.
I just wrote home about it.
Yeah. Well, Billy Jerk Haynes, for the record, it's Billy Jack Haynes. wrestled Hercules to a double count out in an excruciating 7.5 minutes.
Next match.
Well, just for the hell of it, honestly,
so let
Bobby
me get this straight. His gimmick is that he likes Portland.
Yeah, his gimmick. Yeah, I lived in Oregon for 4 years, and his gimmick was that it said Oregon on his pants or on his pipe.
Holy shit.
And nobody in Oregon gave a shit about the guy, so.
Yeah, and fucking most people in America don't know where Oregon is. Yeah, he was not good.
He
blows
ass. He does everything ass.
He had a beard.
Yeah. Great. I have a beard.
So do I, but I don't say Oregon on my pants. Not right now.
He's got a fucking beard, so what? That means that the current Los Angeles Dodgers general manager would like to sign him because he's white now. That's the only useful thing about him.
Shit, I'll show up in the third and leave in the second.
Yep.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Honestly, next match is a hell of a lot more worth talking about. This is classic. Hillbilly Jim, Little Beaver, and the Haiti Kid beat King Kong Bundy, Lord Littlebrook, and Little Tokyo by disqualification in 3 minutes, with, more importantly, with Bob Uecker on commentary.
Bob Uecker.
Yep. Oh, I love the Uke. My wife's from Wisconsin, so, you know, she makes sure that, like, every time the Uke's on that I shut up and listen. Not that I wouldn't anyway, but,
right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She's
hey,
the voice
you
of her childhood.
Brilliant. Little Beavers give Bundy a shot in the boiler.
Oh, I love the Uke. And that match is talked about a lot still to this day, even though it's a 3 minute, you know, basically useless match. But just the sight of Little Beaver and King Kong Bundy.
Yep. Which, to summarize for those who don't know, the referee gets distracted. And, you know, the big guys aren't supposed to touch the little guys, but King Kong Bundy, after being provoked, thank you, body slams Little Beaver and then drops an elbow on him. And then all the midgets come in and save Little Beaver and run King Kong Bundy off. It's hilarious.
The human marshmallow.
Yeah. Aunt Jemima spatula. Marinated mushrooms. What the fuck did that even mean?
I don't know.
Who cares? It was awesome.
It's awesome. Bob Uecker can say anything.
I love Bob Uecker. Oh, God.
In the lobby, he should be inducted into the celebrity wing of the WWE Hall
of
Fame.
He's in the Baseball Hall of Fame, deservedly. And he's on, if you ever get a chance, like, there's a whole thing about him on the Major League DVD. It's just like a half hour with Bob Uecker, and it's about the funniest goddamn thing you'll ever see. He talks about his baseball career, which is just about 10 minutes of the funniest. Him hitting about 187.
Yep.
Just brilliant. Yeah, he's still at 80 something, still absolutely sharp as a tack. So,
And I realized this was the following year, but hey, Uecker, you realize that with a batting average of 200, that means you only hit one out of every five guys. Yeah, if I ever had a good year, it really ruined me now. Okay, so the moon is full and so am I. Fucking Bob Uecker takes off after Fabulous Moolah because she's about to come down to the ring with Harley Race, who wrestles with the Junkyard Dog in an awful
combined age of 204.
Oh my God, the combined weight of a
brutal,
thousand.
But at least they kept it under five.
Yep,
yeah, that's true. Yep, and Junkyard Dog bowed and he kneeled and he fucking took the cape and crown and there he went.
That was back when their philosophy was cram as many matches as you could into a pay-per-view.
Yeah. Yep.
So.
The worst offender of which is WrestleMania 7, which I don't think...
Oh, I agree.
Yeah, 14 matches, one of which was Tornado versus Dino Bravo.
Half a foot versus the cigarette smuggler.
Yeah, shit. Both dead as fucking coke nowadays, but...
Yep.
If nothing else, though, you got to throw these two a bone. This was Harley Race and Junkyard Dog we're talking
about. Oh, I agree. It was fine for what it was. They were both, you know, WWF version of Junkyard Dog was pretty, you know, like WWF version of everybody at that time was pretty one-dimensional, slow, plotting, blah, 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 blah. And Harley was, his best days were 5 years behind him, so.
No, 10. I'd say 10.
Ten was the first, and I was trying to be nice, but,
No.
We probably wrestled for 20, 30 minutes, but you're only going to get to see snippets of it right here.
That's awesome.
Awesome.
God, I love him.
I was dominating him.
That's so funny. Okay, we have Brutus Beefcake and Greg Valentine, speaking of Dino Bravo, as I did a second ago.
The Dream Team.
Of the Dream Team, yeah. Beat Jacques and Raymond Rougeau in a couple of minutes. And then
speaking
Brutus
of
Beefcake,
legendary managers.
Oh,
yep.
No. Please, no.
You know what? We can talk about Luscious Johnny V. Eric, what do you think of Luscious Johnny V?
Fuck Luscious fucking Johnny piece of shit V. Fuck his stupid ass and his horrible ass promos, his stupid fucking mullet, his goddamn mustache. Fuck him not selling for Bruno Sammartino at WrestleMania 1. Fuck him being alive 2 years later to show up at this show, the fucking gall, to even present himself in public. Fuck Luscious Johnny V. What a stupid angle. What a stupid manager. What a fucking horrible human being. God damn it, Dusty. Why can't you get me started on this shit? He is the worst fucking Harley Who scrambled eggs grandma. That's not even fucking funny. Go fuck yourself.
How do we follow that?
We can't.
We don't talk about this match.
Okay, next match.
Except for to say that Greg Valentine and Dino Bravo turned on Brutus Beefcake for no reason at all.
No, none.
Yep.
None. Okay, but the nice thing...
Beefcake was Hogan's friend, that's why.
Yep. So he got to turn babyface at the end of the next match. Oh, yeah, Ed the Mule Leslie. The next match was one of the few things that drew, well, you know, the whole event drew people to the show, but this was actually a draw. Roddy Piper possibly retiring for the first time.
Yep, retiring for the first of nine times.
Yeah, beating Adrian Adonis via sleeper hold, hair versus hair. Roddy Piper had said in a press conference that win, lose, or draw, he was going to retire. This is not where he said he was going to retire from Tiddlywinks and from dating girls, but he'd still hang out with Bob Orton.
That was awesome, by the way.
Yep.
And then Bobby Heenan at that same press conference said that if Hogan, once Andre beat Hogan, he could join Roddy Piper in Hollywood. He could park cars in the back lot. But anyway, this is awful. This is Adrian Adonis, who used to be able to wrestle his ass off.
Yeah. Oh, by that point, he was so fat and useless.
Yep. Yep. And Roddy Piper could have done the same thing. He was still full of energy, piss and vinegar, but...
Yeah, energy, that's what it was. Is that what you snorted up your nose?
Yeah, those 82 ultimate lines of rocket fuel. Yeah, about that. Anyway, Roddy Piper wins. Brutus Beefcake runs down and cuts Adrian Adonis' hair.
Again, for no reason.
No reason, yeah, they don't really... And then inexplicably becomes the barber, I guess. So
yeah,
it's all alliteration. That's
I didn't yeah. Well,
that I cut people's hair. Don't do that.
Why don't you go do that and not be in the ring?
Yeah, exactly. Please. Yeah, I don't know. It was a good match, and no, what did I say? It was a good match. It was a funny match, and it was funny because then Roddy Piper holds up the mirror for Adrian, and he chases it around the ring and tries to punch the mirror. Whatever. And then Jimmy Hart took a couple bumps. The crowd was into it from start to finish.
Yep.
He took a couple wrestle-licious bumps is what he did.
Yep.
That's right. Yeah. That was the midpoint of the card. If I can scroll down, I think that was match 6 out of 12. Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so now it's starting to get dark in Pontiac, Michigan. You can see it through the translucent dome, and we get our six-man tag team match of the night. The other one, because the other one was full of midgets. The Hart Foundation, their cohort, Danny Davis, the suspended referee, beat the British Bulldogs and Tito Santana in about 10 minutes.
Yep.
We had talked a minute ago about Bret Hart and Madison Square Garden and, you know, seeing the Bulldogs and the Hart Foundation. That match alone would have been... fine.
Yep.
But instead we had to get Danny Davis, and you know, Tito's not bad, but it just...
No, Tito was just thrown in there, you can tell, because the Bulldogs couldn't bring Winston or
Because Winston couldn't get his wrestling license in time.
He had his manager's license, but he couldn't get his wrestlers.
Exactly. Fucking Bob Geigel is about ready to pull him out of there.
Yep.
I don't know.
No.
Danny Davis gets the pinfall.
Yeah,
whatever.
Just to continue the storyline, that's really all it was, because
yeah,
Dynamite's back was starting to fail on him, and yeah, it was, you know, it was
it
just
was
a match.
Again, what it was, yep.
Yep.
here we go, the natural Butch Reed, he beats Coco Beware.
Future WWE Hall of Famer, Coco Beware.
Oh my God.
How
oh,
stupid is that? But yeah,
he couldn't even beat Butch Reed.
Future 2010 inductee natural Butch Reed.
Oh, right.
No, and then in 2011, the guy who dyed Butch Reed's hair.
Brother Ted the barber.
Oh my God, Brother Ted shot my shoes.
Brother Ted cut my hair. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. Probably the only real memorable thing about this match is Tito Santana running down to the ring and tearing off Slick's outfit.
Yep, for no real discernible reason.
Not really, no. Yeah, to build up that big Tito Santana versus Butch Reed feud down the road.
That we're still talking about to this day.
Yeah, well, we are, kind of.
Well, we kind of, but I mean...
Here's another big draw for the show. Ricky the Dragon Steamboat pins Randy Savage. 14 and a half minutes, Steamboat wins the Intercontinental Belt. This is also months in the making. Randy Savage attacks. He actually is wrestling Ricky Steamboat on Superstars.
Right.
And then uses the bell on his throat, drapes his throat over the guardrail, and hits a double axe handle, crushing his larynx.
What? Yeah, if you get the Saturday Night's Main Event DVD, they talk about that a lot on there. So, kind of good.
That's right. I think that's probably what it was.
You got to get it.
Okay.
Yeah. It's really, I mean, it really helps build up the story to it, so.
Okay. But, you know, this is one of those things where this was the anomaly for this show. This wasn't normal for WWE.
No, not at all.
It's been said a million times was the big musclehead league, and here they are entrusting two amazing technical wrestlers with 15 minutes on their biggest card ever.
Right.
And, of course, they deliver.
Right, and if you've ever read anything, Steamboat, you know, says that Savage had every move planned out from day one, and, you know, they'd call the spots as they went, and they just had that match memorized down, and it was perfect. I mean, it went off perfectly for 1987.
Yep. Randy Savage has a history of doing that, though, I think.
Oh, yeah, his whole thing is he has every match planned down to the nth degree, so.
As long as he's working with somebody with a decent memory, a.k.a. Yep. Something that'll coach up.
And Steamboat, you know, of course, because he wrestled Flair and everybody, and he was good, he just winged it in the ring. You know, they had the finish, and he'd go. But so it was hard for him to learn it, but he apparently had it down pretty good. So.
Does this match hold up today?
It's okay today. It's good. A lot of near falls, but... It's not the... If you put it in 87 context, it's fantastic, but I've seen 20 times better, you know, now on, like, a Backlash or whatever, but...
Oh, God, well, it's true.
Considering the first four WrestleManias, that match shines, so...
All right, let's breeze through these next two. My God, Honky Tonk Man pins Jake the Snake Roberts.
Yep.
This is all set up with a guitar shot on the snake pit.
Oh, God. A real guitar, too.
Oh, totally
you could
not
see, you could see Jake's spine compress.
You could see his eyes just gloss over, oh, wait.
Wait.
Yeah, about that. I don't know. Honky Tonk Man, I get it. I mean, they're about to give him the Intercontinental Belt. I don't know if you... there's a whole story behind that. Like he was.
Yeah, that's a whole different...
They needed to get the belt off of Ricky Steamboat because they were pissed at him.
Because his kid was born?
Yeah. And Dusty is this
Derek.
Yeah, goddamn him. And that kid is going to debut in about 2 years, I bet you. So.
Something about this sounds right. Something like Hulk Hogan heard about this whole, like, situation. looked over Honky Tonk Man and said, give him the belt.
Yep.
Anyone corroborate?
Yeah, because I don't really know. I think it was just meant to embarrass Steamboat, I thought. Like,
okay.
Give it to the joke, you know.
I don't know, though, because who did Hogan get hired when he went to WCW?
Honky was one of the
Honky Tonk. Yeah, he only had that one match, but he was there, yeah.
Yeah.
So, they were boys, really.
Yep, that's true. That would make perfect sense in the grand scheme of things.
Yeah. Well, that match happened, and it was a surprise finish. Iron Sheik, oh my God. We could do 20 minutes on this, but let's not. Iron Sheik,
let's just skip it.
Off, beat the Killer Bees. Somebody got humbled. Moving
Brian Blair. Yep.
Okay, and then honestly, like, what the fuck else are we going to say about this match that hasn't been said throughout history? Hulk Hogan beats Andre the Giant in front of how many? 38 million people?
Yeah. 32.5 million, something like that.
Everybody knows the famous story that went with it. Andre wasn't sure if he was going to lose or not. He could have pulled a fucking stroke to decide to win, but graciously decided to let Hogan win in the last
All the way up to the next time, Hulk Hogan's biting his nails, wondering if he'll actually be allowed to pin Andre the Giant, if Andre will actually allow him to do it.
Yeah.
If you watch
that match now, again, you take, like Dusty was talking about WrestleMania 18, you take the crowd out of it. It's an awful match, you know?
Yeah.
But
probably the worst thing ever is the fact that Hogan peels away the mat from ringside, bends Andre the Giant over, a man who probably shouldn't have been bending over at the waist at that time.
No, he couldn't hardly move at that time. Yeah.
And then put Andre's head between his legs as though he was about to lift him up in a pile driver position.
Yeah.
And then fucking forces Andre the Giant to back body drop a 300-pound man with a fucking completely torn up back.
Yep.
Right. I mean, there's nothing good about this match except for the crowd reaction.
Yeah, and it's just the build-up of everything. But really, it's legendary just for crowd reaction. The match is pretty awful.
Yeah.
But, you know, I give it negative 42 stars.
Right. The so-called close count wasn't really close at all.
No, it was 1, 2, 3.
Yep.
Yeah.
Hogan had his fucking shoulder out. You're talking about the first near fall early in the match, right?
Yep.
Yeah, Hogan had his shoulder out for fucking ages.
The only thing that leads to is the creation of SummerSlam at Survivor Series, so Andre can get his win back.
Yep. Exactly.
That's it.
And then
leading to the highest rated match of all time. So.
Yep. Which then leads us to something we'll talk about tomorrow, probably
the
entire show. Also featuring Bob Uecker. We'll talk about that tomorrow.
Yep.
Okay. That's WrestleMania 3 in a nutshell. I like the word nutshell. I'm gonna keep
it. Nutshell is good.
Let's just finish this up. This is the WrestleMania that got the most votes for best WrestleMania of all time. WrestleMania 17, X7. Exactly 8 years ago today, April 1st, 2000.
Oh, wow. Wow.
Houston, Texas, same town as this year's WrestleMania.
Yep.
At the Astrodome, lots and lots of matches, some of them good, some of them iffy, some of them okay.
Yep.
And
I just watched it today, in fact, so.
Well, here's the funny thing. Let me just interject quick before we even get to this match.
No, go ahead.
I watched it on WWE 24/7. They have it in two parts. They cut out Kurt Angle versus Chris Benoit.
Wow.
Yep.
That's a pretty goddamn good match. Like, I watched that today, and it was... I mean, I actually hunted down the original WWF from 2001 version because they kind of edit it progressively as they go. So I have the original version as it aired, like, in the and the DVD technology where it's like half is on one DVD and half is on the other. But, God, that Angle-Benoit match, that's a travesty to cut out because that's unbelievable. Good mat wrestling, good everything.
It was the third or fourth best match of the show.
And it's a great match as it stands,
Yeah, just bouncing around the card. I mean, Austin and The Rock was great.
Undertaker
was great. The TLC match was great. You know,
it's unbelievable. Even the McMahon match was unbelievable. So
yeah, true.
I couldn't believe it.
Unbelievable. I can't believe it. Whoops,
well, no, I mean, for what it, for how it turned out from what I expected,
no,
it
right.
was, yeah, unbelievable in that way.
Yep. Okay, let's breeze through this card because, strangely, I don't feel like there's much to talk about when it comes to these matches. I think that there's something more to this show that we need to explore after we get
yep.
to the card.
Yep. Oh, I agree.
Okay. Intercontinental title match, Chris Jericho, William Regal. Dusty?
Nothing.
Yeah.
Okay. I agree. Bradshaw, Farouk, and Taz beat the Right to Censor, Bull Buchanan, the Good Father, and Val Venus 4 minutes. Bradshaw beats the Good Father. He gets to get the pinfall in his home state.
Yep.
I like this one. I really like Kane versus Raven versus Big Show in the hard.
It's title. Really. I watched it today. It's really entertaining. Still.
Best hardcore match ever, maybe.
Uh huh.
Probably the best WWE hardcore match ever.
Yep.
All the shit backstage with the golf cart and
And then throwing Raven through the plate glass and the golf cart stuck, and you could tell there was supposed to be a golf cart chase and
and it failed miserably.
Yep.
Okay. Eddie Guerrero, the late Eddie Guerrero pins the late Andrew Martin test.
Next match
to win the European belt. So this wasn't pretty.
Nope. And it's even harder to watch today, so
yeah. Dusty, any opinions on Dean Malenko running down to the ring in a mustard-colored polo shirt?
I didn't even remember it happening, so it must have been awesome.
Yeah. Okay, the mysterious match that disappeared off WWE 24/7, Kurt Angle versus Chris Benoit.
It's an illusion!
That's awesome.
It's
Kurt Angle is playing a clown in a movie right now.
Yeah.
It all ties together, baby.
It's a great...
He plays a killer clown, I think killer, and Chris Benoit's dead. Ooh.
It's great mat work. The whole leading up to it, the match before was, you know, like that they edit out of a SmackDown now, if you see it, is, it's, what is it, Eddie and Benoit versus Test and Angle.
Oh, my God.
Three dead guys and a guy who almost died.
Yeah.
So.
This match was the beginning of something good. These guys would put on a hell of a lot of good matches.
Oh, man, and that match was something else. It's just back and forth, and it just starts as, like, Olympic-style, you know, quote-unquote Olympic-style mat wrestling, and it's great. Benoit keeps up with them move for move, so.
China pins Ivory in 2.5 minutes to win the win.
Next match.
China's
last match.
Yeah, well, and fuck her,
Ivory
too. She didn't
hot.
Even want to. Ivory was hot. And she was a great actress, too. She was clutching onto the women's belt before the match, screaming out.
But
like
she doesn't even get a move in. You could tell China just totally steals that match.
Yeah. China didn't even want to be the women's champion, is the thing.
Nope.
So,
and then the match, the title disappears for another 7 months, so.
Exactly. Shane McMahon beats Vince McMahon 14 minutes in a street fight. Mick Foley, okay, this is fucking dog and pony show at its best.
Oh, it is unbelievable, yeah.
Mick Foley's a special guest referee. Stephanie McMahon runs out. Trish Stratus was a heel for a while. She's making out with McMahon, but she turns because she's pissed at what Vince is doing with Linda McMahon, who's sedated at ringside sitting in a wheelchair.
Wheelchair, yep.
That's why...
It's so perfect. Like, at the time, I mean, the whole match is storyline leading up to it. It's so soap opera. Like you said, dog and pony show. It's, one, if Shane buys WCW, like, 6 days before. And it's just, you know, so there's layer upon layer upon layer upon layer of this match. And it's Shane versus Vince with, you know, a drugged-up Linda on the outside. And it had no business being good at all. And just, there's so many distractions with Trish running down with Stephanie, with Linda kicking Vince in the balls, and it's just, it really had no business being entertaining, but really, if you just put it in storyline perspective, it's really fun to watch.
Mm-hmm.
Shane hitting the band Terminator.
Oh my God, yeah. And Dusty, this is something I'll point this toward you because it's something Raven likes to talk about all the time. He always uses the phrase dog and pony show because he likes to talk about his career in ECW as that.
That's how he got over.
Exactly.
And what else can you do in this match?
No. And they knew their limitations, so.
I mean, are you going to have a five-star Matt Classic? No.
No.
Are you going to have a five-star high-flying Flippy-Doo Classic? No.
Nope.
You know, so you gotta take it to the streets is what you gotta
do. So. But what I loved about this, watching it today, was that it was compartmentalized. Like, every, like, 2 or 3 minutes, there's something else going on, so you kind of get distracted within the match, so you forget that there's not really, you know, anything going on. Shane tries to hit an elbow, and Stephanie pulls Vince off the table.
And they lay around for a couple minutes.
Yeah, and then Shane lays around, and then Vince punches Mick, who then turns on Vince later. I mean, it's just one thing after another, but it was great, like, in little increments. It turns out, as a whole, it's great. It's just really fun to watch.
Agreed. Okay, now we have Edge and Christian versus Bubba Ray and Devon Dudley versus Matt and Jeff Hardy in a Table of Ladders and Chairs match. Edge and Christian win, second year in a row that they win one of these matches.
Yep.
One of the better matches in WrestleMania history. It's also a big clusterfuck and just.
Oh, it's a clusterfuck and spot fest, but it's fantastic to watch. The spear that Edge hits off while Jeff is dangling from the cord.
Oh, classic.
Yep.
Was this the match where all the shit happened? Like, correct me if I'm wrong, but Rhino runs in.
Rhino, Lita. Rhino runs in. Lita runs in. Spike Dudley runs in. Spike and Rhino, who had just debuted on SmackDown like 3 days earlier.
Yeah.
Yep, because all the ECW guys are showing up, so.
Good and well done. Dusty, did the right team win?
This is another one where it didn't even really matter.
Okay, that's fair.
It didn't even really matter who won this match. Mm-hmm.
Right, exactly.
It was a spectacle, and people were going to remember what happened. They don't necessarily remember who won.
Yep.
They don't bring that up. Bring up that it was a really good match. So.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Gimmick Battle Royal. Iron Man, and of course, the rumor is that he only won because you couldn't throw him over the top rope or he'd break him.
My favorite line of that entire night is, by the time Iron Sheik gets the ring, it'll be WrestleMania.
Yeah. Fucking classic out of Bobby Heenan.
Bobby Heenan and Gene Okerlund on commentary.
Yeah. Other luminaries, Brother Love, the Bushwhackers, Jim Cornette, unbelievable in there.
Kim G.
Earlier in the night, Jim Ross says, "How come you're not in there, Paul E?" And Paul's like, "Yeah, what do you want me to do? Hit everybody with a phone?"
Yeah.
Funny.
Perfect.
I do.
Gobbledygooker, and I was disappointed with the Gobbledygooker because it wasn't the original costume.
No, it was pretty lame copy of, and it wasn't a Guerrero at all. So.
No, fuck no. The Goon, Sergeant Slaughter, Tugboat, whatever. Other people.
Freebird, Michael Hayes, which didn't make any sense to me.
Yep. Oh. Duke the Dumpster Trozzi.
Shout out to
it was
Matt.
Just comedy. All it was the entrances. The match itself didn't mean a goddamn thing, but just watching these guys make their entrances was pretty entertaining.
Yep. Did I just hear a shout out somewhere in there?
Yeah, shout out to Matt Fanatic. He made a Duke the Dumpster reference on the message board today.
Awesome.
Okay, Undertaker pins Triple H. Really good match in my
opinion.
Good match. Yep.
Just a good brawl. Yep.
Good semi-main event for Steve Austin beating The Rock, almost 30 minutes, no disqualification. Steve Austin comes home to Texas, wins the belt, but the trick is he wins it with the help of Vince McMahon. The crowd doesn't care.
No, the thing is they, that was a big mistake, turning him heel in Texas, because nobody cared if he was had McMahon's help or not. They just were glad he won.
Exactly.
Rock was the clear heel coming into that match.
Yeah.
And they just screwed that up and, you know.
Yeah, that was bad booking.
Which we'll get into in a few, I'm sure. But that was kind of the culmination of a lot of, that was the last great night they ever had, so.
Yeah. And, of course, part of the build-up for that, too, was forced to be The Rock's manager. And then, like, as fucking quick as that happened, it was done in a flash. And,
it lasted a week.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Yeah, exactly. It was weird build-up. They had the weird, like, face-to-face interview, like, the sit-down interview, and it just didn't come off well. Really,
yep.
they did not need to do much to build this match up. It just kind of happened, and it sold the fucking show, sold out
yep.
the Astrodome, and so yeah. Good match, weird finish, strange build-up.
Yep.
Aftermath was odd until Steve Austin started showing a sense of humor. You can't – Steve Austin just could not have been a heel at that time.
No, and they were – they started getting a whole new audience, and because the WCW has finally folded. And it was just – it was a giant misstep putting him as a heel. Because a lot of fans were only fans of Steve Austin.
Yep.
So – I think that was really the last great, yeah, like I said earlier, the last great night they ever had. That was the last hurrah of WWF before the bubble burst.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Okay, I'm going to pose the same question to both of you guys. Jordan, you go first. As we've gone through this card, we've done, skip it. Nope, don't want to talk about it. Why did this WrestleMania get voted the best WrestleMania of all time?
I really think it was a culmination of a lot of things. It was like I just mentioned, it was kind of the last giant hurrah. Things that started getting kind of clusterfucky in WWF, and then, you know, one thing that doesn't get mentioned before, the Shane introduces the WCW guys in the booth in the top. Yeah, the loft up top. And it was kind of the last, there was not a lot of expectations. Things weren't booked very well coming in because you could tell there was a lot of turmoil because of the XFL and Vince buying WCW, that it just had sort of gotten really confusing. And I think expectations were kind of low. And I really do believe it was just the last hurrah, that last great wrestling boom. It was, there's comedy, there's great wrestling, there's spot fest, there's just good matches all the way through, and it was, I don't know, that's kind of why it sticks out to me.
Okay. Dusty, why would this match that we've skipped over a whole bunch of and bitched a lot about, but of course said good things about too, why is this WrestleMania the best WrestleMania of all time? So it says Stunt Granny Universe.
Yeah, I can think of two or three reasons, one of which is what Jordan said. What would follow would be one of the worst years ever, really.
Oh, yeah.
And this was kind of the start of that. You could start to see it was going to be real bad real soon. But this was good. And I think another reason is because fans on the internet are work rate fans more than anything, and this had a lot of 3-4-star matches on it.
Yep.
I mean, it had a pretty good percentage out of 11 of real good matches. So, and I think people are more appreciative of that on the internet now than they are of stuff like, like WrestleMania 7, which was okay, but it was, you know, more gimmicky and schmazzy, you know?
Yeah.
So I think
should have been held in the Coliseum.
Yeah. Right. Well, there was a terrorist threat, so.
Okay.
But,
I don't know if you're done, sorry.
No, that's good. Go ahead.
Okay, I think there's also something to be said about, they're in a stadium, year before they're in Anaheim, Jesus Christ.
Jesus Christ, yeah.
Working backwards, they were in Anaheim, they were in, hang on a second, I lost where I was, we're at 17. They're in Anaheim, they're in Philadelphia, they're in
Boston.
They're in Chicago. At the Rosemont Horizon.
And then
they're
Anaheim again.
Anaheim again. Then they're at the fucking Hartford Civic Center for WrestleMania 11.
Yep.
You know, it's like any of these wrestling fans who stuck with this company for that long, like us, this was kind of a reward. This was like,
yep.
Oh my God. Like, we were in the shits. Then we were fucking even more in the shits when we thought that the shit was going to go bankrupt. then we started beating WCW, which was great.
Mm-hmm.
Then we honestly, because that's kind of how it felt at the time.
Right, no, I agree.
Then we demolished them to the point where they fucking went out of business. Then we bought their business. Now here we are in the Houston Astrodome in front of 70,000 people. Now we finally get our stadium show. You know, it was the culmination of a lot of things. But Dusty, like you said, it was also the start of a lot of things, unfortunately. It was the start of a lot of downward things.
Yeah, I mean, I really think that the reason the show doesn't suck is because they hadn't bought WCW until that week. I think you know, they had had everything planned for WrestleMania, and then WCW fell into their laps. So
it just it felt like a fun show, and it felt like a sigh of relief.
Uh-huh.
I really kind of feel like this was a sigh of relief for wrestling fans.
Yep. No, and like I said, for me, like looking back at the Backlash and the Judgment Day and the other the follow, it's really the last great wrestling boom show there was.
Yep.
Because the next one is just awful, and then it just gets worse after that, and then the Invasion gets clusterfucked, and then everything after that. And it's just this culmination of everything that had led up to it, and then that's just like the final hurrah, like the curtain call. So,
okay. I don't know. I think that pretty much says it all for WrestleMania 17.
Yep.
I think thus that pretty much says it all for the top five WrestleManias of all time, as voted on by people who actually come to this website, which thank you for doing so.
Thank you.
We're in the midst of a lot of WrestleMania talk this week. We're talking about current stuff. We're talking about old stuff. I'm going to do my best to get this posted tonight before I go to bed. And
good luck.
So hopefully everyone will have this to listen to, probably in two parts. Sometime very soon, tomorrow night, we're going to talk about the worst five WrestleManias of all time. Woo, daddy, they fucking stunk. All right, so I'm going to sign off. Me signing off. So, Jordan, you would also like to sign off?
All right, well, thanks, everybody. Thanks, you guys, for having me on. And this is Old Scratch over and out.
All right, for Eric Nelson and Old Man Old Rivers, who smells like old whiskey, this is Dusty Ebink, who needs a shave. This has been another edition of the Stunt Granny Audio. We'll try to do better tomorrow.